Welcome to Normalize PTSD. Today we have Scott. He's the founder of Hidden Battles. You can find that foundation in the show notes as well as a link to their podcast. Hope you guys enjoy this. Scott is a former police officer and veteran, so he's going to give us a little bit of both perspectives, and hopefully you guys enjoy it and find it helpful. Here we go.
Today we have Hidden Battles, and today we're talking with the founder, Scott Hyder. Hi, Scott. Thank you for joining me.
Hey, thanks a lot, Jonathan. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. I appreciate you jumping on here. It's really amazing what you're doing over there. And I just want to get more information on it, kind of simplify it a little bit so our listeners can break it down if it's something that they're interested in or if they can get involved in. I'd like to make that easy for them.
Yeah, absolutely. So we were founded back in 2016. I'm a disabled veteran. I was a combat engineer in the Army for 10 years, then retired police officer. But what I did was I wasn't really dealing with my post-traumatic stress because I didn't know what it was. I didn't know that. I thought I was just grumpy. You know, I thought I was just, it was my personality, right? So my brother in 2012 had taken his life, and I never really dealt with that. And then I never really dealt with a bunch of other things that I was dealing with, the trauma of my profession as not only a soldier, but as a first responder, as a police officer. So in 2016, I was, like I said, I was grumpy. It was brutal. And I ended up, because I was afraid of unfit for duty, I wasn't reaching out for help. Like I was literally laying on the couch all day, not doing anything. And then about an hour before my wife got home, I'd clean the whole house, vacuum, make dinner. And she'd come home and say, wow, you were really busy. But I wasn't. I was faking it, you know? But I didn't know what it was. I thought I was just tired or whatever. And then I started to know that I wasn't doing well. And in 2017, in January, I was in a car accident that ended up ending my police career because I had a spine injury. And now it was worse. So now, like, I was no escaping. I was in a bad spot. And I reached out to my Army buddies because, like I said, unfit for duty. Didn't know if I was going back to the work or not. And one of my Army buddies who actually worked on a veteran's suicide hotline, I reached out to him because he's also a fitness nut. He ran gyms in Baltimore and trained professional athletes. And I reached out to him and said, hey, I'm just not doing good. You know, what can I do? He said, you got to work out. I'm like, yeah, but I'm broken. He's like, how are your legs? I said, they're good. He's like, well, get off the couch. He goes, you're getting fucking fat. And mm-hmm. I was like, wow. And I needed that, brutally honest. So I started rucking. I found that rucking was helping me. And then what I did was I started reaching out to other veterans saying, you know, hey, this is what I'm going through. And, you know, what can I do? You know, what can I do to kind of get that community going? I really needed to be around people who understood me. And I told them, I said, yeah, I'm suffering with depression and a little post-traumatic stress. Cause now I knew what it was. I was starting to do my research on it. Right. And by like week 10, I had like 20 people rucking with me. And I started to notice that it wasn't just rucking. It was community. You know, we needed community. We needed that sense of being around people like-minded. And I think when you get out of the military, there's that transition where not only do you lose task and purpose, but you lose your brotherhood and sisterhood or, you know, that camaraderie. And
right,
that's realistically what by accident is what we became. We became just a community of local people, all with something in mind and something in common, all speak the same language. Know what I like to call the picnic gasp, you know, where people say, oh, have you seen this? And you're like, yeah. And then you tell a story and they're like, oh, you know, they do that gasp. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, if we're around other veterans or first responders and you're like, yeah, I saw this, and it was really bothering me. We go, yeah, hey, I got you, you know, and there's not that fear of being instantly judged, you know?
Right. Absolutely. I think that's a big impact for sure that you highlighted going from military to civilian life. Military, I mean, you got the immediate support structure, your family and stuff, at least a lot of us do. And that helps a lot. But I feel like the community around that helps on like a different level because of like what you said, the zero judgment, because we're all going through pretty strong emotions when dealing with stuff like that. I want to loop back to, you said that you noticed that there were some things going on, and one of them you hit on was getting fat.
Yeah.
Were there some other things? Cause, what I like to do with this podcast is like, there's people that are different stages. You know, there's going to be people that have dealt with their PTSD at a really good level for years. There's going to be some that are just starting. There's some that pretending everything's fine. Mm-hmm. Like that stage when you're really aggressive and angry. Like I've been there. I thought it was normal. That's what you're like after war.
Yeah. I call that the great pretender.
Right.
You know, where they, everything seems fine, life of the party, and then they go home and they're their dark place, you know? A lot of the signs and symptoms that I can look back and see, because I had no training. Nobody talked about it. Right.
Exactly.
So I end up I go back and I see the irritability, right? The disconnect. You start losing interest in things that you loved. You know, I was a rock climber. I was rock climbing all the time. I had my own shoes and harness and chalk bag and membership, and I didn't do it anymore. One day I just didn't feel like doing it. Days that you look for reasons not to get out of bed, you know, and that's depression and that's post-traumatic stress, and they go hand in hand. And, you know, when you're finding reasons to not do things, and listen, we all know in the military, there are those guys that work harder to not do things and get out of things than to just do it. But when you're not that person and you're a superstar and you're high speed and you do great and your uniform looks amazing and you're very well groomed and you're like, you know, you're Johnny on the spot and Mr. TM, right? And then you go to, now this guy's getting written up because he's showing up the formation late. His uniform looks like crap. He's, you know, not shaving. Those are telltale signs. You know, you're starting to let go a little, you know?
Right.
Things like that, things when you start to, when you like marginalize things that are important, you know, family time, when you start to just find reasons to not go to family events. I mean, your wife and kids are going, hey, we're going to the park. And you're like, I'm just going to hang out here and do some stuff around the house. And then you don't do shit, you know?
Yeah.
That's a big one too. And these are the things that people think they're normal. Like, I'm just having a bad day. Yeah. All right. You're having a bad day, but how many bad days do you need to have before you realize that, you know, there's something bigger than that?
Right. No, I totally agree. So once you start identifying those, you mentioned rucking helped. I'm a huge advocate of exercise. It promotes mental health. You know, it makes me more mellow, gets some of them demons out, depending on what level of exercise you're doing, for sure. What are some other things that you, added to your life to raise the quality of your life?
So I tell like anything listen, if sewing's your thing, you know, it could be anything. You need to find out what's good for you. I know guys that have tried doing floral, and now they're doing floral arts, and they're like, this is the greatest thing ever, because it's so out of the box for them. You know, they're not going through the motions of, say, like guys who play guitar and musicians and stuff. Sometimes they're playing guitar and they're just motor skills are going, but their mind's not there. Where if you find something that you need to identify and use all your sensory to do. For me, I used to play guitar a lot and I had neck injury, my hands didn't work. So that was one of the things. Music for me is something that I do to help me get in a good place. But I will tell you honestly, just running my foundation is really helping other people is huge for me. That helps me. We do a support group on Tuesday nights, and if I'm in a bad spot and I go there, I listen, I help, I do some mediation, I do some peer support. And then if I'm having a bad day, I'll talk about what's going on with me.
Right. When do you do that? When you talk about what's going on with you, are you communicating with veterans, family?
So we're doing veterans. So this, Hidden Battles is who we cover. We cover veterans, EMS, like paramedics and EMTs, fire, police, corrections officers. And we also do trauma medical staff, like nursing. So it's pretty much anybody that puts a uniform on and puts themselves second to complete strangers is who we help.
Right.
So our support groups we're a mixed bag. We have nurses, we have firemen, we have veterans, we have, you name it, they come. We're just all walks of life. We even have, on occasion, we even have wives come. And I'll tell you, you know what the wives do when they come? It's not like a bitch session. It's a session of validating. Like, as you get somebody with post-traumatic stress and they're suffering and they're struggling, it's a lot of denial. Like, I don't do that. That's not me. You know, nope, not at all. And then as she's saying, hey, he's doing this. I've noticed that he does that. He flies off the handle and everybody in the room is nodding their head.
Be like, yep, me too, been there.
Yeah. And then we validate what she's saying. And then he like looks back and he goes, wow, I didn't realize. And I'm like, dude, yeah, of course you didn't realize. Like it's easy to look in, you know, and that's a lot of it. But yeah. And that's what our support groups do. But then on a bigger level, when we do, like we do a couples cooking class, which is run by my sister and she's a classically French trained chef. And she also works in the medical field. We do the couples cooking class. And like again, this is something that now you're doing something. Whether you may be a cook, but you're not maybe you've never made this meal before, you know? Now your focus is on the meal. It's not on what's going on in your life because you're focused on something you're not familiar with. You're not running through the motions. But wives will start to talk to other wives and husbands will talk to husbands and vets talk to whoever. You know, you get that hero, I'll call them, starts talking to another hero. And now what they're doing is they're communicating and they're almost networking. And they're really just getting along and building that camaraderie, that community. And the wives are talking. And the wives, you'll get like a senior wife who says, you know, if your husband does this. Or one will say, like a younger wife, and my wife has done this and stepped up to the younger wives. And they'll say, oh, my husband, he'll take shifts. He just stays away from the house. Like he doesn't want to come home. And I think it's me. My wife will tell him all the time. Sometimes it just gets that way. And you got to give me a space a little. And my wife will tell him, do not lose your identity. You need to maintain your friends and you need to keep your network going. You know, don't sit around waiting for him to come home, because if he's working a lot and you're sitting at home, it's going to cause stress between the two. And don't take things personal, you know, and that's a lot of what Hidden Battles does, is we build that community where we're kind of like an Encyclopedia Britannica for each other. You know, we can reach out to each other and say, you know, hey, this is what's going on. What do you think? And then we'll say, oh, absolutely. That's classic. And why don't you try this? Or look up this article and read this article, or share a TED talk or something. And that's what we do. We have clinicians on staff that we reference out to people. So that helps.
That's awesome. That kind of reminds me, there's two type of veterans or even first responders that like register on me. And there's some that have the wife and kids or husband and kids. And then there's the other ones that are single. And I'm seeing a pattern with a lot of the ones that are single. They'll isolate themselves because they know that they're being toxic and they don't want that toxicity impacting any of their loved ones or anything like that. And then the other one, other flip side, is the ones that are in relationships that have that connection that they can't get away from. There's a thing called secondhand PTSD, and it really impacts the family and stuff like that. So I think it's really powerful to make that a better situation. A lot of times you want to inform your family. You want them to be on your side. You want them to know, like, hey, this is what I'm going through. And the longer you procrastinate in doing that, the more impactful it's going to be in a negative way.
Oh, absolutely. And it's funny because we've had you know, wives come up and talk to me and they're like, oh, I think I got I'm sharing his PTSD now because I'm experiencing. I'm like, no, you have your own PTSD now. I'm like, his secondary to you. I said, it's now yours. I said, you have to actually take care of yours. And I suggest that they go and start to talk to people. And I do suggest that, you know, therapy, which is not for me. Like I went and sat with a couple of clinicians and I just did not well for me, you know, where I find the more community-based healing works for me, but it's just me. Like, but I will tell people, some people love and it works fantastic for them. And it's just not for me. Like I'm an advocate for it, but it's not my thing, you know? And yeah, I'll tell them.
Sorry. We're all unique, you know, everything's going to work for, you know, there's not one pill for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little bit similar. Like I found therapy helpful in the sense of, one, it meant I overcame my pride, admitted that I had an issue and a problem. And then after that, it was like, okay, then they kind of gave me guidance and direction on where we're going next. And then that's how it helped me in a sense. The other like more in-depth, like EMDR or EFT or any of those therapies, like, you know, I gave them tries, you know, maybe I didn't give it enough time. I don't know what it was, but I'm more of a look forward kind of guy instead of look backwards person.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at.
And I'll tell you, like EMDR, that's another podcast for another time.
I know.
Oh, yeah. That is like, for people who don't know what EMDR is, it's a technique on dealing with trauma. And it's kind of like saying Ford and Chevy. Like, you have clinicians that are like 100% for it, and you have clinicians that are 100% against it. And they said that it brings up more and you have to deal with that. It's just, yeah, it's crazy. I went to our clinician because when I was really bad, my wife was like, you need to talk to somebody because this is not going good for us. And I went and talked to a guy, and literally the guy slid a box of tissues over to me and was just staring over his notebook at me. And I was like, wow, this is, I don't know, you know? And then the next session I went there, all he did is talked about how his wife cheated on him with the police chief. And, you know, I'm like, am I here for you? Yeah. Or what the, you know? And,
yeah.
And that kind of soured me. So then, yeah. And like, what do? You try other things. You try Reiki. And I'm like, oh, this is voodoo witchcraft. This is not me. You know, Then meditation. I found meditation was good. But all it did is made me sleep. And I enjoy that because I don't sleep often.
Right.
But like, what, yeah, like
meditation for me is really big. I usually do it every day after my run. There's no sleeping then because my heart rate's through the roof. You know?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of like resets me and gets me ready for it. But, certain meditations like I rest yoga or things of that nature, like It intentionally makes you fall into a little bit of a sleep. And I found it pretty amazing for like a 30 minute session, as long as you let me sleep for an hour, you know?
Yeah. So yeah, we were doing the Irish yoga, right? And I just said that with my accent. So it sounded like I'd said Irish yoga, but I rest yoga, right? So
I have the shirt.
Yeah. So we did it, right? And what happened was we were there and the lady says, all right, we're going to start doing this technique. And know what she did? She gave me she started doing the 2 minute sleep exercise that the military developed.
Right.
So she starts doing so start relaxing your head and your eyes and your ears. And next thing, you know, I'm like, you know, when you consciously tell yourself not to sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the way I was.
Yeah. And then I slept. So, and little I know I woke myself up snoring because that's, you know, just what happens. And at the end of the class, she comes up to me. She goes, what did you think? I said, oh, it was fantastic. I feel amazing. She goes, well, I don't encourage people sleeping in my yoga class. And I said, why? Who was sleeping? And she says, you were. And I was like, what? And she goes, yeah, you were snoring. I said, no. I said, no, that was all the turbulence of all my pain. I go, leaving my body. It was transcending. Yeah. And she goes, oh, transcending. I like that. She goes, well, I don't mind transcending. I went, all right. So eventually, after like so many weeks of doing it, there was so many other people sleeping in the class that she just like just accepted it. Yeah. And it was like, we were doing it at like 6 o'clock at night. So then it was like, oh, great. But then now we're doing therapy, you know, at 7 o'clock at night, it's supposed to go to 8. And it's like, by the time I get out of there, it's like 9:30, 10 o'clock. And I've drinking like 2 cups of coffee and now I can't sleep. Cause I never drank coffee in my life until I retired. Like all during the military, never drank coffee. As a police officer, never drank coffee. And then I retire. I'm like, hey, what's this coffee stuff? And I will tell you, it's a good thing I never drank it. Cause I would have been super productive.
Right.
Oh boy.
A whole different new standard. Oh, and I wanted to mention, you're talking about the cooking classes. I love the testimonial. I believe it was from Sharon.
Oh,
and
yes.
She was like, her husband didn't want to go at all. Mm-hmm. But after he went, they never missed a single time. And it was like the highlight of their day, you know?
Yeah.
And that's absolutely typical veteran or first responder. You know, we don't want to do any of that stuff. And then we do it and we're like, all right, this is pretty cool. We can get into this.
It's like ballroom dancing, right? Like you sit there and somebody will say, you know, your girlfriend or your wife, you'll do anything to appease. Well, I was going to say girlfriend, you'll do anything to appease a girlfriend, a wife, you'll argue. But they'll suggest like ballroom dancing or something. And you go, all right, I'll go. And then you secretly have a good time. And you're like, this is great. And then, you know, if you want to go again, we can go for you, honey. Yeah.
Right. This is totally your idea.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'll go watch that rom-com with you. Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to watch it.
Oh God. I'll share my tuxedo box with you, you know?
Right.
No, yeah, it is. It's like, that's what I said. If you find something, whatever it is, you know, especially for like with Hidden Battles events, we do so many different events because we want to draw the attention of so many different people. You know, because like I said, if we rucking's not for everybody, you know, so we'll do cooking classes aren't for everybody. And then we're starting up an archery program and that might not be for everybody, but we do kayak adventures and that might be for somebody. So we do so many things to just try to lure people into getting out and actually doing something productive and getting off that couch in a sense, you know, and that's
absolutely. And
that's realistically what to do. I mean, if that's the flute that makes the mice follow you, then that's what you got to do.
Yep, I agree. And I like that segue because that's where I want to take it next. You guys as Hidden Battles, you do a whole lot. So let's just start with your location and what locations you reach out to. Like, what's your zone in your bubble?
Okay. So we're based out of Lowell, Massachusetts. We're based out of Lowell, Massachusetts, although I live 8 miles north in New Hampshire, which is amazing. We cover pretty much all Middlesex County of Massachusetts. It's realistically is 56 communities in Middlesex County. We pretty much cover all those. We cover southern and central New Hampshire also. So we do a lot, and we do at different locations because our rucking, we don't do rucking every time at the same spot. Right. We feel that if we change the, you know, topography up, it's different, different skill sets. Also, it's a different demographic of people will come to different locations. Some people are afraid of cities. They don't like cities just because they, you know, one particular city has, you know, like Lowell, people look and it's a city. It has crime and people, and then it's got a bad rep of people like, oh, I'm not going to Lowell. So they won't go, but they'll go 5 minutes up the street to Hudson, New Hampshire, you know? So,
right.
We do that. But I mean, our outdoor adventures that we do are up in Newfound Lake, which is about an hour and a half away from where we are, and people will go. I mean, give them a reason to have a good time and they will go.
Right.
We just did a 22K ruck. It used to be a 22 mile ruck, but we were getting a lot of casualties. There's a lot of people that weren't coming back, right? No, a lot of people were not returners. And right. Because it was brutal. There's like 9 hills that are 800 feet. And and you're walking on, you know, hardball and just carrying rocks. And so we switched it up to a 22K, and we had 220 people come out, you know, this year. And people were coming. We had 2 people fly in from North Carolina to do this ruck, you know.
Right.
People were driving from Cape Cod to where we were is about a 3-hour drive. Mm. So, you know, so we get people that do that. Our kayak adventure that's coming up is going to be at Newfound Lake again. We have stuff all over, you know, our area, and it's not so much in Lowell, it's everywhere around Lowell. So, you know, we just change it up so we can get different people and it's closer, and those people are going to get sick of going to the same spot and then eventually going to start losing people. So
exactly.
Keep it spicy, right?
That's what I was thinking too. Keep it spicy. Yep. Don't want to get redundant, because then after that, it's like, oh, we're just going to go see those hills again, those same trees. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. Yep. True.
Awesome. I noticed on your website that you guys have some goals, you know, scholarships for some children to get more information on mental health, maybe some outreach, summer camps, stuff like that.
Yep.
Just want to dive into that. Like, what kind of people qualify for those? What kind of scholarships you're looking for? Like, you know, just a little bit more information on that.
So what we're doing is our scholarship program we're going to be doing is we have one that we want to help somebody. So you can go into the police academy as a self-sponsor. What you do is you have a town sponsor you, because you have to be vetted. So they'll do the background, everything else on you, but they have to pay out of pocket for it. And that's about $5,000. So we want to sponsor or at least help somebody pay a good portion of that. Another thing we're trying to do is we're trying to get a scholarship going for nursing. And this is all going to be this fall. And we're going to give a sponsorship for somebody going into nursing. And then we're also going to do a sponsorship for mental health. So somebody who's taken a mental health or a psych class. And we want to pay for those. So we're going to do some of those. We raised a lot of money to do that. We actually also sponsor service dogs. Last year, we actually purchased a service dog for a New Hampshire operator. I believe he was an Air Force operator, the PJs or what is it?
CCTs.
Yeah, something like that. So, mm-hmm. So we us and 2 other organizations chipped in because those things are a lot of money. And we got a New Hampshire Navy service dog, but we work with other organizations like Delta Dog, which is a nonprofit that give veterans with post-traumatic stress service dogs at free to charge. So we do that too. So, I mean, yeah, we raise a lot of money so we can do and support other programs, but yeah, that's pretty much, we're kind of all over the place.
Yeah, I know you guys got a lot of events. I listened to a couple of your podcasts and it seems like you're just never settling down. You're always moving, which is amazing. Yeah.
My wife wants to kill me because
I feel like one of the biggest reasons I want to do this podcast is there's so much out there, you know, and it's hard to, like, if you start searching like nonprofits for veterans, first responders, the list is endless. And it's like, some of them aren't great. some of them are great, you know, and I just want to get in touch with as many as I can. So like put them in contact. And if it's like in that New Hampshire area and you're feeling froggy, go for a hike, go for a walk. I think it's awesome. As well as you got a couple of community events coming up soon. I believe I saw some cornhole golf tournament, a movie night, stuff like that. What other things are you getting into, I guess, in the near future?
So we, let's see, we have, there's a local amusement park to us, Canopy Lake Park. So we actually just bought 100 tickets. We're going to sponsor, well, actually sponsor, no, we're picking up the tab for families of four. We're going to give out packs of family of four to 20 families. And then we've done, let's say in the 80s. So wait a minute, my math's off, but yeah, so we bought 100 tickets. We're giving out to families of four. So it's going to be $10 a ticket because we found that when we do events, if we don't put somebody a little financially involved in it, they blow us off and then we lose a lot of money. So like what we'll do is like, it happened to us with baseball games. We'd buy, buy a section of a baseball game out. And then you have, 100 people say, oh, I'm coming. And then they don't show up because they've got nothing invested in it. So what we do is, for a huge discount to an amusement park, we're charging $10 for a family of four for $40 so that they show. It's kind of like saying, I got to go. I got money invested in it. So we do that. That's coming up. We have that kayak adventure coming up in July where we're asking you to raise $100 for Swim at the Mission, which is a big organization out of New Hampshire that supports probably 50 veterans nonprofits. So we work with them a lot. So we're asking people just to raise $100 and the $100 that you raise goes directly to Swim at the Mission. However, we're paying for your food. We're renting your kayak if you need it. We're paying the park fee for you to be there. We rent boats to offer support on the water. We also have an ice cream boat that we charter for the day that comes and drops off cold water as you go in and gives you free ice cream and stuff. So we have that.
That's the one I'd be next to.
Oh God, I love that. It's such a great day. It's and you know what? And the lake we're doing it on is actually the seventh cleanest lake in the country. It's got 32 feet of visibility and it's got no like milfoil or anything. It's unbelievable. So Google Newfound Lake, you'll lose your mind. So we have that. Then we have our family day cornhole tournament in September, which is realistically our biggest fundraiser, but it's free. It's 100% free. The food's free. The drinks are free. We have live music. We've had people who have actually played for us that have actually gone to Nashville and recorded like shortly after. It has nothing to do with us, but this just show you the talent that we get going there. We have classic cars. We have canine demonstrations. We have the National Guard comes out. We have the Marines come out. They set up, displays. We have jump houses, kid zones, and we get like 600 people to come to that. And then at the same time, we have a cornhole tournament that costs minimum money to get into because it has a cash prize. So we have that. We sell raffle tickets. Then 2 weeks later, we have our golf tournament, which we give away teams of four to veterans to be in. So we have that. And then throughout the year, like I said, cooking classes. We have one cooking class a month. We do the family movie night, like you said, where we just rent out a whole movie theater and give away free tickets. We're always busy.
I love it.
Oh, and I can keep going because we have so much stuff in the works, like the archery, like I touched on. We're actually doing fly fishing course coming up this month. And then we have a program that's going to kick off this fall where we're doing a reintegration and we're trying to do a reconnection of parents who had worked full time during COVID. So we're trying to get them to deal with the post-COVID, post-traumatic stress it's there. And it's going to start rearing its ugly head for our nursing staff and first responders that had to work through COVID. So we're doing stuff with this company called Badger Wilderness Survival. And it's going to be a weekend where they learn how to do fly fishing. It's a Japanese method. It has no reel. It's just string and a bamboo rod. Archery, deep woods first aid, some equine therapy, kayaking, and just, a whole weekend of fun stuff like that. And that's going to be, once again, that's free of charge. And we actually just got a grant from NetScout, which is a software company in Westford, Massachusetts. And we just got a grant to pay for that. And that's also through the Greater Lowell Community Foundation. So that was huge for us. So, stuff like that, like it's, We have we have so much stuff pop up that like I have like crazy ideas that come at like 2 a.m. that when I approach my wife and my marketing director, Chris, I say, hey, this is what I want to do. And they're like, oh, it's a great idea. When do you want to do it? I'm like, 2 weeks. And they're like, no, that's not 2 weeks. Like that's like 6 months out. I'm like, eh, whatever. So,
but we're going to put it on the list.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How's that October amazing. Sounds? Yeah. Sounds
right.
Good. So, yeah.
And you haven't even hit on like the photography class that's coming up, the painting. I mean, you got
Jeep night,
the coffee with veterans. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's amazing because it feels like every one of them's unique. Every one of them's different. And it's like, that goes back to the whole idea. Like we're all unique. We're all different. Like one of them's going to work for you. Hopefully,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Like, and if not, you're going to keep trying.
And know it is. And that's exactly what it is. It's like, not everything. Listen, I know that we're all unique, right? In our own special way. But I think that our parents lied to us because there are many so similar to us that we're not that unique, you know?
Like, in this industry, for sure, there's a lot of commonality between us a lot.
Because but if you talk like, so Marines, for instance, right? Like every Marine I met is very similar. They all have the same, I would say mentality. We all have that dark humor, but theirs is a little darker, right? you can tell a Marine right off the bat, just their personalities. And it's not a bad thing. It's how they are. Air Force people the same way, very laid back. Army guys are pretty all over the place. Navy people, they're pretty much the same. Like if you're in a crowd and you're talking to somebody who's a veteran, you literally can go, I can go, oh yeah, this guy's an Army guy, or this guy's definitely a Marine. I mean? So it's easy for us to say, yeah, we're unique, but we're not unique either. If that makes sense.
No, it does. It does for sure. And I feel like if you're in the group, you know exactly what you're talking about. It could even get broke down a little bit more detail, like MOS or whatever, you did in those groups, as well as police officers. I met a guy yesterday, random. He was from Tennessee. The reason we started talking, because I assumed he was a Marine and now probably a cop. Yep. And he was, because he had the high and tight. He was walking real firm, you know, like we got to talking story. It was great.
Yeah.
But anything else you want to hit on real quick? Any success stories or
we have tons of success stories. I will tell you like one success story I love to tell. And he's actually one of my best friends now. So we used to have a local baseball team to us in Lowell, and they actually, the Red Sox packed them up, and the MLB ended up saying no more AAA teams. So we end up losing the Lowell Spinners. But we used to do so many veterans appreciation nights and first responder appreciation nights there. So one night we did it. And what we do is like, when we do stuff like cool. I don't just buy tickets and give people tickets. I try to give them like the best experience of their life until my next experience that I try to top it. But so what we would do is we would have them show up early. They'd get to come and do like a tour of the baseball field with their kids. And then they would meet the team. They get to go out on the grass on the field and hang out. And usually it's like a celebrity. Like one night we did it, we had a retired Boston Celtics player out there, Cedric Maxwell, who's a legend. So he was there, and like some people meet them and stuff like that. But then they didn't know they were throwing first pitch. You know, so then they throw first pitch, their pitchers, their military pitches up on the big screen, you know, they're getting announced. It's like really cool. So one night we're there and we had a new guy, and I'm like, I've never seen him at any of my programs. And I walk up, I introduce him to myself, and he's like, oh, my name's Matt. And I saw, hey, how are you? He's like, good. And I said, I'm like, Army, right? He goes, yeah. And I said, oh, no kidding. What was your MOS? He goes, oh, I was a mechanic. And I said, oh, where were you mechanic? He goes, oh, I was in Colorado. I was with the 10th group. I used to deploy with them all the time because I could fix basically anything. And I'm like, oh, no kidding. So we start talking, and he had been out in Colorado. He had moved back here to be with his sister. And like, she was married, had a kid. And then shortly after, she had moved back to Colorado. So he's out here by himself, like no friends now. And he just started coming to Hidden Battle stuff. Then I started becoming friends with them and talking, and I know that he had a lot of trauma. There was a lot of trauma from a lot of deployments with him. And the more and more we talked, the more he opened up. And from like a peer support point of view, you know, a lot of relatable stuff. And he had been in some really dark places over and over and over again. And his now fiance, they just got engaged yesterday. She used to call me up and say, you know, I noticed that he's a lot happier when he's at Hidden Battles events. And I know that when he's having a hard time, he'll call you up. And after he's done talking to you, he's not drinking so much and he's in a better mood and he's more productive and stuff like that. And I never realized it until one day he actually told me that just being part of the Hidden Battles community actually saved him, which
that's amazing.
Was amazing for us, you know?
Yeah. No, that's why I don't know about you. That's what I'm doing it for.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. Cause it only seems like there's a couple options that it goes either you get help or you die.
Yeah.
And it's either by self-induced from drinking, drugs, a lot of us get addicted to the adrenaline, you know, so we start doing things that are definitely risque, a little bit dangerous, you know? So, yeah.
But I mean, realistically, think about it. Mental health is the catalyst for so many other problems. You know,
it is.
It's a catalyst for depression, for substance abuse, abusive relationships, self-harm, even like you said, that self-destructive personality, you know?
Yeah.
I say it all the time. Everything goes back to mental health. Like, you know, where could we have fixed this, or where should we start to fix this? You know, sometimes, yeah, it's too late. Like with my brother, it was too late. I noticed some of the signs with my brother, but not until I got a lot more intense training that I go, holy shit, I sure saw this a long time ago.
Right. I didn't mean to cut you off, but you're able to see it in yourself, or like, I felt like once I became educated, I cannot just only see it myself, but I could see it in all of those around me that are suffering. And you're like, it's so obvious, you know? Yeah. So the first part, just get some more information, you know?
Yeah. And I will tell people, if you're in any supervision or supervisor's role, like an administrator, or even listen, for all the young sergeants out there, corporals who are now taking on responsibility of, you know, taking care of troops, I will tell you to start looking into the signs and symptoms of depression and post-traumatic stress, because once you know them and you start to observe what your troops are going through and you start to help them in a mental health capacity instead of an Article 15 capacity, you're gonna impact the lives of these people a lot better, and you're gonna get a better quality troop, and you're gonna have less headaches for yourself. I know that when looking back, I remember writing guys up for just doing the stupidest stuff, you know, not doing their jobs, looking like crap, the uniforms looking like crap, and you constantly, I was in a hot, like when I was a sergeant, I wasn't a hot ass. But after you talk to somebody six times, eventually you got to do something about it, you know? And then, when I was a police officer, I went from being, you know, the traffic hero of the year to getting written up constantly because my depression and my post-traumatic stress was beating me up so much. And I think as a supervisor, if you start to examine and you start to see what the symptoms and signs are, you might approach things that you think are violations of conduct or policy and procedure as something bigger than that. You know, if somebody had approached me and said, you know, when I was going through my first divorce, you know, like, what's going on with you? Because here I am, I'm coming into work like five seconds before shift, you know,
right.
My uniforms look like crap. Like, instead of writing me up, talk to me, find out what's going on, find out what the underlying story is instead of putting pen to paper. You know what I mean? Have a conversation, start something, start the dialogue.
Exactly. I feel like all people are usually trying to do their best. And if they're coming in, that's what their best is. And it's definitely because there's something else bothering them.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, anybody in a position should really just open up a conversation with somebody. I mean, that's what PS support is. It's conversation, you know, and find out what's going on with this person's life and try to help them that way. I mean, you're not helping somebody if you're writing them up or suspending them or Article 15 in them or extra duty in them. You know what I mean? That's not the answer. It might be your immediate answer, but it's not the long-term answer.
Exactly. No, I like that. I listened to one of your podcasts. I can't remember the guy's name, police officer, and he was in charge of the peers.
Oh, group. Danny. Yeah.
I know, like, there's a lot of police in my circle, you know, family and extended friends of that nature. And I've never heard of an organization that has a peers group like that. And I think every one of them should. I mean, I definitely see issues with having it be so close to your work. You know what I mean? But it sounds like they're doing it really well.
I will tell you. So Boston, Massachusetts has the first police peer support unit in the world. Some will argue and say that there's one in Finland. However, Boston PD does it right. I actually interviewed on my podcast. His name is Brian Fleming. And Brian was a peer support guy. He was a SWAT operator. He had substance abuse issues. And now he does, that's what he does for a living now, is peer support. And he's retired, like I said. But Brian, in that interview, talks about how the peer support unit helped with the Boston Marathon bombings. And then also how they went out to Ground Zero after 9/11. So the peer support model is amazing if it's done right. And Boston PD does it right. And it's like other like Dallas, Texas now, San Antonio now, they all have the peer support, and they're all using the Boston PD model. And it's very successful. Like, it has to be. And that's honestly what, like I said, Danny's, his police department does too. And yeah, you say, I mean, you hear how successful it is, and they've got guys that were circling the bowl, you know, they were going down, and now they're right back to where they were. They're doing great. They're in counseling, you know, they're working with their stuff and, you know, and dealing with it instead of, running from it. And even like up here in the Northeast, we actually have in Southern New Hampshire has, they have a CISM, which is Critical Incident Stress Management, which is a great course, but they have a CISM team of volunteer clinicians that are on the ready for police officers, paramedics, fire, if needed. And that's amazing in itself. You know what I mean? Because it's like up here, we're doing it. And
yeah, that's amazing.
We just hope it spreads like wildfire and starts going around the rest of the country, because it's definitely needed. It's way overdue.
Yeah, 100%. I'm going to wrap it up right now. I appreciate you coming on. I love it. How do people get in contact with you? How do they get started?
So you can check us out. You can Google Hidden Battles Foundation. You can go to hiddenbattlesfoundation.org. You can actually check us out. If you're an Instagram person, we have an Instagram page, Hidden Battles. Facebook, you can go to Hidden Battles Foundation Facebook page. We also have the Hidden Battles group. The Hidden Battles group is realistically for you. It's for anybody who's a fan of Hidden Battles or falls into our community. And you can go on there and people post events that are coming up. They post articles that are amazing. And anybody can post. I mean, obviously we monitor what goes in, but yeah, I mean, if there's a road race that supports, you know, a local hero that's passed or a memorial ruck or something, yeah, throw it in there. You have a question, you know, your husband's acting a way or a wife's acting a certain way, throw it in there. People are going to answer you, you know, and that's realistically what that page is for. So that's the Hidden Battles group. But yeah, we're all over the place. You can find our podcasts everywhere. It's the Hidden Battles podcast. There is a Hidden Battles podcast, but she is definitely not us. So just check that out. But yeah, so just be careful on that one. But
awesome. Well, I appreciate it. And on that, I'm going to wrap it up here. And you have awesome. A good day.
Yeah, you too. Thanks a lot, my man.
Thank you. Bye.
And that was Scott. Scott is good with people. I hope you guys enjoyed that one. It gave me the idea. Probably going to try to reach out to Boston PD and see if I get some more information on this peer support unit. I'm sure that there's like a template or something so we can get it out there to other people. Well, with that, I'm going to wrap it up. Have a good one.